We're going to be in the 15th chapter of Exodus. And the part which I want Dave to read is just the poem section only. So that starts in Exodus chapter 15, verse 2, and it will end in verse 18.
I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider has thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise him, my Father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his army he has cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the Red Sea. The depths have covered them. They sank to the bottom like a stone. Your right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Your right hand, O Lord, has dashed the enemy in pieces. And in the greatness of your excellence, you have overthrown those who rose against you. You sent forth your wrath. It consumed them like stubble. And with the blast of your nostrils, the waters were gathered together. The flood stood upright like a heap. The depths congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. My desire shall be satisfied on them. I will draw my sword, my hand shall destroy them. You blew with your wind, the sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, glorious in holiness? Fearful in praises, doing wonders. You stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. You, in your mercy, have led forth the people whom you have redeemed. You have guided them in your strength to your holy habitation. The people will hear and be afraid. Sorrow will take hold of the inhabitants of Philistia. Then the chiefs of Edom will be dismayed. The mighty men of Moab, trembling, will take hold of them. All the inhabitants of Canaan will melt away. Fear and dread will fall upon them. By the greatness of your arm, they will be as still as a stone. Till your people pass over, O Lord, till the people pass over whom you have purchased, you will bring them in and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance. In the place, O Lord, which you have made for your own dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established, the Lord shall reign forever and ever.
So what do you think about that statement? Hallelujah, okay. Any comments? What impact you about this particular poem? What did you see with it? How do you as a person? We're going on this journey. You remember going on this journey? Okay, the first month, what happened here? Well, Pete, 14th was the killing of the lamb. 15th, you took the Passover and you fled. Not fled, you walked out with high hand. And you went on to, now, you've gone through the Red Sea. This poem is after you've gone through the Red Sea. What has happened? What is the impact of going through the Red Sea have to do with you as a person, as an individual? What is it? What's the meaning behind all that? Is it only for somebody else? What value is it to you? What do you understand of what God has put there for us to see and to know?
There really is no one like our God. Mikamoka, there's no one like you, O Lord.
That's where that word came from. For this, all the songs, Mikamoka,
right,
comes from this song.
Right, and it gives the people courage, too, I think, because he is so powerful. He's awesome in his might. No one could stand against him.
Okay. Anything else, as you noticed, in this particular psalm? I call it a psalm. It's a poem. I understand that, but go ahead.
Well, this is, I suppose, very elementary, but it's the whole picture of salvation. They were in bondage, and they were, like, in baptism. the old man passed away, and they were freed, set free,
okay,
and became new.
Anybody else see anything else in what's going on here? Pat?
Well, what I notice is that even after they had such a great deliverance, I mean, they went through the Red Sea, the Egyptians were, you know, the water came back over them and they were delivered. And just like them, we do the same thing. God can give us a great deliverance. And shortly thereafter, we're fearful again and not trusting him. And I just see that.
Okay,
I mean, here
that.
They had this incredible victory, and how could you not know that it was of God who delivered?
He's got a question or a statement.
Just comment on what she was saying. That was the first thing I was thinking, too, was the trust that we can have in God. You know,
trust about what?
Just trust in his deliverance, his salvation, his protection.
Okay.
You know, we can trust in his word. In all things. I mean, in the Old Testament, it talks about trust, and it's very synonymous to
the new faith. Let's go one more step further. How do we know from this psalm we can trust him? How do we know from this psalm? Your kids are getting close to it, so keep thinking. Yes?
Well, I understand here that God is in charge.
Okay.
That's what I can trust, that no matter what they
How
seek
do you
to do,
know that he's in charge?
It says so right here.
What does it say?
Well, he said, the Lord is my strength and my song. It says the Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. So
all
he's
right.
in charge.
We're out of the Red Sea. We are already past this point. It's finished. It's behind us. What is this telling you in the future? What will God do in the future for your life? This psalm tells you that he will defeat the enemy before you, and you do not have to fear. That's why you have to have faith and trust. Can you really believe that God actually could destroy the names of these people that he just got to? The enemy that they're going to face? Look, you come out of baptism, and now you are a Christian, and now you believe God, and you're walking with God. Now, when trouble comes, now when calamity comes, what do you do? This is where that trust comes in. You have to trust him that he's going to defeat the enemy before you. You understand what I'm saying? Now, I'm talking physical human being enemy here. You don't have to be afraid of anybody, any human being, any organization, any group of people. Because now you have this confidence. How do you know that has confidence? Well, you look back and say, what happened here? Pharaoh is dead. His men are dead. His prime military guys are dead. They're all dead. That should tell you something. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. You're going to go forward, and God will do what he said he's going to do. What did he say he's going to do? He'll take you to the promised land. Do you believe him? Do you trust him? Do you have confidence in him? This psalm tells you, yeah, he's going to destroy the enemy before you have to come and face him.
Well, it seems to be, what you're talking about, just a proclamation of his power. They saw him make good on his word. He
right.
is powerful enough to take the powerful enemy out.
And then you got this wonderful verse, the thing goes that Miriam picks up the song. Okay? And she's happy, and happy because now it's past, but the future is yet to come. Now, with that in mind, this is why it's important. We look at this psalm and we can say, oh, it's a great one, but it's telling us something in the future. And you, in your life, in my life, this is why this song should be registered in our brain on a regular basis. Not just, oh, we'll just read it. Okay, who cares? That happened to the Israelites. They are an example for us. What did the Apostle Paul say? It's written there for our admonition, for our understanding, for our... Now, I look at this thing, and we're saying that Yahuwah is going to destroy the enemy before you. Do you believe him? Do you trust him? See, that's the bottom line. Now, is he going to present you the enemy in front of your face? Oh, yeah. Well, even see, one came from behind later on. In the book of Numbers. We're not there yet. And who did they have to look to? Well, we won't get there. Forget about that statement. We'll get there when we get there. Okay. Well, I just want you to know, when we look at this psalm, and this particular one, from the second verse here in Exodus to the 18th, tells you something. Yea, Yahuwah shall reign forever and ever. He's going to take charge. He's going to be, and you could be at shalom with him. Amen. You are now at peace. But after we left, after we left, what took place? What was the first camping place? What was the second one? Third one? Let's go back. Let's go back. Now, it's important. Now, we've been told, pay attention to our history. We can learn from being Americans. You look back on our history, where it started from, and how it was, so we can have a beginning saying, what did our America start out with? We need to know that, not assume all this ancient writings. Who cares about whatever happened to the beginning of America? Right now is important. Now is important. What now happened today is important. No, it's not. What happened is important to tell you why you are here today and you are now living in this area or living here as Americans. On the 24th day, what did they face? Yeah, Mara. First thing God sent them to was bitterness. Remember we went through that last Sabbath? Okay, so we have an understanding. And if we just say, oh, they did it, and God didn't know it, and all of a sudden, oh, bitter water, what are you doing with this? And God says, okay, what am I going to do? Hey, Moses, come here. Take part of this tree, yeah, see if that'll work. No, he deliberately led him there. And does God lead you? When you were baptized, did God lead you? You may not think it, you may not remember it. Did he lead you to a place where you were not very well pleased? Whether it's 3 days later or a few months later, all of a sudden, things didn't go well according to your plan. Because the love of God, he loves me, he will not cheer. No, he's going to chastise you, chastise me, because that's what he does. Why would I do that for? Well, isn't he kind and gentle and meek? Isn't that what Apostle Paul said Timothy to be?
Our children. He wants to develop godly strength.
Now, in order to take that godly strength, you got to do something. You got to face God. And so when you look at this poem, when you look at this thing, what's going on, you already have really a different picture. Yeah, God did bring you to this point. After you crossed the sea, after you were baptized, God put you in a place which was extremely uncomfortable. You probably don't remember it now because ancient history, right? Just think back. Because it's written there for our admonition or our understanding, and that's how God works. If you want to know how God works, take a look what he did to the Israelites coming out. You're among them. Try to be among them. Try to understand what they were having to learn so that you yourself can say, oh, now I understand the mind of the Creator of heaven and earth. Remember I said before, you're related to the Creator of heaven and earth. What's it like? What's he like? What is your father like? What does he think of? What does he do? How does he act? All right. That being said, we've got to go to verse 22. The 15th chapter. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea and went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days' journey and found no water. And when they came to Mara, they could not drink the water of Mara, for there the water was bitter. Therefore the name of the place is called Mara. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried out unto Yahuwah, and Yahuwah showed him a tree, which when he had cast it into the tree, into the waters, the waters were made sweet. Now he made of them a statute and an ordinance, that there he proved them. What was the statute? What was the ordinance that he had used there to prove them? You remember the statute? Do you remember the ordinance? I'm sorry, what?
He knew what is right in his eyes, pay attention to his command, all his decrees. I will not bring on the name of these that brought the Egyptians. I am the Lord.
I'm the one that's going to heal you. So a whole proof of the tree or the time of bitterness was the proof that God will do what? Heal you. If what? If what?
Obey him.
Hear my words. Now remember, these are brand new people. They didn't know what God really wanted them to do. They had no idea what God really was going to command them. Oh, this happened. Now, we look back and says, oh, you foolish, should I say Galatians? Or should I say foolish Israelites? Don't you know that God did this to you? Well, no, they didn't. That's why they complained. They didn't know the hand of God was doing it. Do you know sometimes that God does things in your life that you think it's the devil doing it? Maybe it's not, because God does the chastising. He does the correction. You may not like it. You may think the devil's doing it. But if he loves you, cherishes you, and cares for you, he's going to chastise you. That's what this lesson's all about, right? Now, he moves us on. Moves us on. It's very fascinating. Verse 27, and they came to Elam, which means palms, plurality for palm, where 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees. And they encamped there by the waters. What do you think about that?
You have the 12, which is the 12 tribes, and then you have the 70 for the 70 elders, palm trees.
Okay. Anything else? What else do you see? The what?
Provisions.
Provisions, okay.
Waters there weren't bitter.
Okay. It was what?
I said the waters there were not bitter.
All 12 wells were not bitter. They were good drinking water. All right. First he showed them their attitude was definitely, he's going to heal them. And he takes to a place where there's 12 wells of water. How many palm trees? All right. Just a play on words or numbers. When you divide 12 into 70, what do you get? You get what? They get 5. 12 goes 12 times. 5 times 12 is what? 60, 70. 60, rather. Yeah, 60. So what are we doing here? What does that mean? What is palm trees? Many of you missed some years ago, I guess it's now, Daniel's explanation of it. What does the word palm mean in Hebrew? It comes from a verb. That which is erected, straight up. straight up. A palm tree goes straight up. And that's what they looked at. And what was on top of the palm tree? This is the... Don't think of the Pacific Ocean, please. Think of over there where Israel's at. They didn't have, you know, palm, didn't have coconuts coming down. What did they have?
Dates.
Dates. All right. So now we have a lot of dates. All right. Yes.
Well, the palm tree is used in several of the tribes' ornamentation because it stands for an erect person, for a righteous person.
And how do you know that?
Because it says somewhere that it's one of the symbols. It's a symbol of Manasseh, which is supposed to be righteousness. I'd have to find where it says that, but it's a symbol of right. And it's also on the border. It's incorporated in the priest's clothing with the pomegranates and the bells. There's also palm trees, and the palm trees are a symbol of a person.
We'll see that as we go along. Okay, so it's interesting to know what's going on here. So we have 70 of them. That means the 70 elders should be upright. Elders first. The 12 are the 12 nations. Now you have 70 elders who are to be upright and righteous. They should be upright. They should stand tall. They shouldn't be weak-kneed people. Now, when you start standing tall as an elder, what's going to happen? People are going to look to the elder, right? They're going to look to the elder for guidance, for input, for wisdom. And we'll see this as much later, later on down in the future. In Leviticus 23, verse 40, "And ye shall take on the first day of the booths," that's future tabernacles, "goodly trees, branches of the palm tree, and the boughs of the thick tree, and the willows and the brook." So here we have now a palm tree. The leaves of the palm tree must be taken to the... Why would you do this? Do you know what the city of Jerusalem is called? You don't know. City of what? Peace. Do you know what Jericho is called? You know, that's the bad city. What was it called? Called the City of Palms. It was a very lush, very productive area. And was walled to protect them so they would have the abundance. The wall went down, and Israelites got the palms. Yes.
Well, one of the allegories of the Feast of Sukkot is that it pictures the coming after the Messiah's coming and the setting up a government, that all nations can come up, Zechariah 14, all nations can come up and worship at Israel, at Sukkot. So we have several different kinds of trees, again, connoting different kinds of people, that all people come up to the Feast of Sukkot.
All right, now, basically what she's saying is true. The things that we bring in there, the leaves, whatever, the branches, whatsoever, is a representation of human beings. You don't believe me? You go to the book of Judges and read the story about the one man that was not killed, all his brothers were, and he used a poem of poetry about branches and bushes and trees and grapes to read one of these days to find out what he'd be talking about. You know what he's talking about is people. Real people. God uses the things He's created to teach us about how He thinks. Not how we think, but how He thinks. What's so nice about it, that when you think about Moses, saying in his poems, as they wandered, going back, heading for the promised land, the Moabites would be terrified. The Edomites would be terrified. The Canaanites would be terrified. Why? If God be for you,
who can be against?
Or you think Paul came up with that statement all by himself? Think it came out of his head? Or was he seeing that if God's with you, as the Israelites, you cannot be afraid? Right? Is that kind of nice to realize? Maybe understand? Judges I don't want to go to Judges. Ezekiel, if you have a chance, read Ezekiel chapter 40 and 41. It's all about the temple. Quote, third temple. Quote, okay? What is the many, many things are within that temple? A lot of symbols in them. They have a lot of things, but different kind of trees, different kind of pomegranates mentioned, and all those things that God has that brings forth fruit. Then the cedar, which stands tall, and what's the main thing the cedar does? The actual tree.
It grows tall.
Yeah. And what?
The scent.
The scent? What is it? What was it? Oh.
It stimulates. It was used for two things: embalming, because it kills everything, and it gets rid of bugs. But most of all, Solomon built his temple of it because it helps you think. Cedar wood and cedar oil actually stimulates the brain.
So that's why you get smart, standing tall. Simple little things like that. This is, and the five, this is Ezekiel chapter 40, verse 1. You don't have to read, I'm not going to read the whole thing. And in the 5 and 20 years in our captivity, in the beginning of the year, the 10th day of the month, on the 14th year after that city was smitten, in the self same day, the hand of Yahuwah was upon me and brought me hither. And a vision of Elohim brought he me unto the land of Israel and set me upon a very high mountain by which there was a frame of a city and a city on the south. And he brought with me hither, and behold, there was a man who appearance was like the appearance of brass, and a line of flax in his hand, and a reed, a measuring reed, and he stood at the gate. And the man said to me, Son of man, behold with your eyes, and hear with your ears, and set thy heart upon all that I shall show you, for to the entrance that I may intent, rather, that I might show them unto thee that thou art brought hither. Declare all that you see in the house of Israel. Now, there's two other places in the Scripture that talk about a man measuring, right? Where are they? And Zechariah. Zechariah. What's it? Why does he need to measure? What's he measuring? The temple. The temple. This particular third temple is being measured by this individual man that he was taken in the vision to see for the house of Israel to see. And there he made post of 3 cubits score, even the post of the courthouse around them. And from the face of the gate entrance to the face of the porch of the entrance gate, there were 50 cubits. And there was a narrow windows of the little chambers, and to the post with the gates around them, and like the archers and the windows round about within, upon each post were palm trees. Palm trees. Now, sometimes we think the pillar of the temple, the pillar of God. You know what's on that pillar? An image of a palm tree. Upright. The pillar holds it all up. So these 24 elders, or the 70 elders, their function is to hold up the house of Israel. You understand what I'm saying so far? We're going back in time. Why are there 20 wells, 12 wells? Every one of the house of Israel will be supplied water. Living water. Good water. And amongst them are going to be 70 who are upright to hold the house of Israel. The parallel. Yes.
Psalm 92, verse 12. The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree.
Yeah, I got that written down.
They're
too.
They're likened to them.
So what we're learning here, now we're just talking about this next, the third day. I mean, the third camp. Basically, it's not really just the third camp. What is it? Let's go on. That's the third one. Right? From where? All right. Well, the time they left Israel, you count the first place, Sukkot. So we keep on going through this. Now, here you're going to see we're going to move to the fourth, the fifth manna, sixth manna, and water. We'll get to there in a minute. Not today, though. The reason why I've got Red Sea and Etam is because there's two different words being used there, and one in Deuteronomy, I mean, one in Numbers. I'm not going to debate that today. I'm not going to go through that today. It's unimportant. Just that we're on this first day, this third day, this third camp out, happened on the first day of the second month. First day of the second month. Now, what did they learn? What was God showing them? What was God revealing to them that we ourselves can see? Come on. Somebody got an idea?
Say the question again.
What is God showing us, what He showed them, what He did to them? What is He showing us? What is He telling us? Therefore, us to understand, right? Us to comprehend, us to put the picture together, us to say, oh, I know what that means now. How do you relate to this today? Let me ask you a question. Some of you believe you're part of the house of Israel, right? Does God supply you water? What kind of water?
Living.
The Spirit of the eternal Creator of heaven. And out of them, therefore, comes what from you?
Living waters.
Living waters. Now we have this picture that you are going to become and you are partaking of. All the house of Israel is to partake of, there's a future prophecy now, we'll partake of living waters. All tribes. All right? If you are part of them, you are being partaken of and you're getting water. How deep is the well?
Endless.
Technically speaking, it's called a spring. It's not a well like we think a well, but it's deep. The water is going very deep. Out of the earth comes forth this water. Why did it not come from above? Perukata avinu elahayu chabuzi lachem mimaheres. God created this earth that we get food from the earth. We also get water from this earth. You know where you're going to live for the rest of your eternity? You think some of you are going to go up in heaven and float around heaven all day with this outer space to nothingness? Or you're going to be living where God lives? Where did the book of Revelation tell you where God's going to live? Where is the book of Revelation does God say He's going to live? Where is it going to be? Somewhere in beyond Mars or somewhere beyond the distance of 40,000-50,000 galaxy? Where is it? Right here on this earth. That's where God's going to be. He said, I'm going to come down. I'm going to live there with you. I'm going to be part of you. You're part of me and I'm going to be part of you. The last part of that promise that God has will not be fulfilled until that day arrives. Do you think there will be any strong people, personalities, characters in the kingdom of God?
Yes.
Whom?
All of us.
I'll tell you this much. I know I am not one of the foundations. I also know I'm not one of the gate holders. No, they belong to whom? The apostles. They already got them, all right? I can't. So, okay. But I could be someplace else. I don't know where God's going to put me. I mean, be part of the wall. I mean, part of something else. I don't know where I'm going to be part of. I don't care. I mean, part of something that's alive, something that's and where God is at. Where He will look at me and I'll look at Him. And I don't know. I think He'll smile at me and I hope I smile back at Him. Because the past is the past. So we see this thing of the 12 And we see this is a place, in a sense, it's a future thing that's going to take place. And it's centered around that word. Centered around that word. And that word means that which is erected straight up, standing tall. That which is righteousness. That which is pure and holy. What would happen at Marath? Marah? I must test you out. I must test you out. I must find out what you're made up of. I'm going to test you out. I will give you a commandment today. Listen to the words that I say. Heed unto my commandments and do them. And I will do something for you. I will heal you. I will heal you. You'll be clean. You won't have any diseases. All right. Now, I don't know if I've got it here or not. Let me take a look. Oh, this is cool. You know what that is, right? Can everybody see that? Now, most of you are probably fully aware that the traditional where Mount Sinai is not there at all, because it doesn't fit anything in Scripture at all. But there's no other mountain called Horeb near there. But there's a key word which we had to learn. What was the key word we had to learn? Now, here we see Cairo, right? Now, they're coming down through here, and here you see a little valley. You see here? Those are waterways, rivers. And, of course, we have a mountain here. Well, water stop there. Look how big that thing is. Now, over here is a place called what?
Nueva.
What?
Nueva.
Hebrew. Biblical Hebrew. You don't remember. Third encampment. The mouth of the rivers. You don't have a mouth of the rivers in the middle of that Sinai Peninsula. It doesn't exist. Now, that spot, I showed you the map, is called the high spot. Reason why it's a high spot? Because that land is higher. So, remember that they were trapped in the wilderness? And the mountain range is a problem. Now, if you actually physically went there and traveled there, you'll find a mountain range. Well, there's a small travel through that mountain range that you can't see from the air. This little spot right here, that's all sand. All sand. Flat land. It's higher than the water. That's where God spread apart. I don't know what this way or this way. I do not know. There's a landmass here. I'm not worried about that. But you see here, now the dark spots is the shallower waters. The heavy blue is the depth of the water, deeper. So when you and I traveled through this point and you crossed over, there's no way you'd get back. Because what do? He put the water back, didn't he? Did not return. Then you travel to a place where you had bitter water. Well, now you're at this place where there's wonderful water. What's next? What's next?
I was just going to make a comment, because I looked into that a while back, and there's actually an underwater land bridge across that spot. Where right. In all the other spots, you know, it's really steep.
Right.
And you can't really travel it unless you go on that spot.
And they've also found, you know, they found historical
chariot
wheels at a specific point in time in Egyptian history a certain type of chariot wheel was used, and they found it there. It was gold-plated. Everything got dissolved. All right, I'm going to go one more place. I'm going to tease you with something. If I can find it there. Anybody know what that's talking about?
How long they were in here?
To the day.
What?
To the day, 430 years.
From what point?
When Jacob and the land of his people until they left. Joseph was 90.
From where? I'm sorry, what?
Joseph.
Well, they hadn't yet been to the promise. The promise was the land. And they hadn't, technically you could say they were in exile.
When was the promise? When did it happen? When did it,
he was first... Was it Isaac?
Abraham!
Okay.
How old was Abraham when the promise came? When the promise, rather, was stated. He was what?
About 80 years old.
Now add 430 to that age of the promise. How much?
505.
All right. There's still something missing here. Now, when you stop and think about this, that was true. It's when the promise was given. And the time the promise was given, there's a certain thing that was told to Abraham was going to happen to descendants. What was going to happen to them? They're going to go into captivity and be bound and so on and so forth for 400 years. Now, why is it 430? Why is it 430? How old was Joseph when Joseph took over the command? 30 years old. All right. So that's where the 30 comes in. We're talking about Joseph here. Now we have 400 years from that point. All right. Now, next question. What year? Oh, I don't have it here, do I? I thought for sure I had it. Oh, yes. Yes, I do. What year was this? It was the year 365. From what point? From the flood. God has us count. Now, we have a specific count, a specific date, a specific process that he did with Noah, that we have a date. Now we're at 365 when Abraham departed from his father and his mother and the promise was given for all mankind. What was Abraham's response to it? What was Abraham's response to it? Isn't that what it says? He did what? Abram did what?
Believe.
He believed. He believed. Simple as that. Now, what he did not know, he did not know what the future was going to bring. And when God gave him that vision, he didn't like it, did he? He tried to prevent it from happening, didn't he? Symbolically, with the hawks being chased away. So, let's add 150 years. 403 years to this. What do you have? Now, I know we live in this world. We live in such a fast-moving world that what happened 3 years ago is like it didn't happen. It's so ancient of days, no one's going to look back. And remember, how many of you in this room, don't ask the question, how many in this room remember the Bush years? How many in this room remember the Clinton years? How many of you remember the Eisenhower years? Oh, going down real quick. Now, how many of you, please, raise your hand if you remember the Eisenhower years. The years of Eisenhower is best president. How many of you don't know it much about his administration? How many don't know anything about his administration? Right? It's a lot, right? So, see, we think, oh, that's dead history. Who cares about what's happening now that matters? What happens to now where economy matters? What happens now to where to the president, what he's doing? What's happening now is what's... Forget about what Eisenhower did. Who was before Eisenhower?
FDR.
How many remember Truman? Oh, we're getting down there, aren't we? How many remember Roosevelt? Well, let's get down. We're babies. We're very little. We're not very old at that point in time. All right? Do you understand what I'm saying? But that's our world because we are moved so quick and so fast in this world. Let me ask you a question. Let's say 1,000 years ago. Was life going at full throttle? That the minute you woke up, they had to get on that car, get to work, do the work, get it, get gas, get food, get pet, take the kids to school. All that.
No.
Quote, it may be more pleasant, but maybe more difficult too, because we weren't there, right? Now, so when we look back and we say, this is pretty close to 800 years, but we're saying 700, that's how many years since the flood. Do you think... Or do you think that, or do you have the picture that those Israelites had no knowledge of the flood? Oh, they knew very well. Part of their world, part of their life, part of the raising up, part of the teaching. They knew who Abraham was. They knew who Abraham was their father. They knew Isaac was their father. By the way, do you know who your father was? Okay, let's go back. Do you know who your grandfather was? Can you go back to great-grandfather? Get a little stretchy there. How about great-great-grandfather? All of a sudden, it just disappears into eternity. But not with them. That wasn't that far away from them. And they knew. See, they kept their history. We lose our history today in our country and our peoples because we move at such a fast, rapid pace, that we're not even aware of anything that's happened 10 years ago. We're more interested in what's happening now. Because now it's going to affect my baby, my child, my son, my daughter. And after a while, it won't affect them anymore. Because something else will come on. And you say, oh, well, wait a minute, I got something else now. Your mind is always at full throttle, isn't it? You don't have time to say, sometimes, this is my personal opinion, okay? In our modern history, modern times, we contemplate too many things. We put into our brains immediately what's happening here, how are we going to make shoes, how are we going to feed, and where are we going to get our clothes, and we worry about that. You know why? Because we have no place. We depend upon the warehouse of Safeway, Walmart, Costco. We depend upon them to be our storage. However, what happens if they don't store anything? And you don't have anything, right? What do you think the Israelites would do when they had food? Did they go down to Safeway? What did they do? Oh, they had an icebox, right? Icebox? This is funny. How many of you, be honest, remember having an icebox in your home? How big was the icebox?
Small.
It was about maybe 4 feet at the highest. Because you can't have a tall one. What's the value of tall? You had to put the ice at the bottom, not the top. You put the top, it melts too fast. Bottom. And all you get is a down there, the low end of it. So it's only about 4 foot high. Not big. Not much. It's kind of shallow. And so you put your food there that you would eat that day or that week. What did you do with the rest of your food?
We had a cooler in our house that kept things.
How many remember having a cellar?
What? We had a cellar.
A cellar. Now most of you probably say, why would you want to store stuff in a cellar for? We've got refrigerators these days. Cooler. Or coolers. Good luck for the Coleman's Toolers or Igloo Toolers or whatever they call them. I don't know who makes them. But see, what I'm saying is that their world was not like our world. They remembered their history. It was always taught to them from childhood to childhood to childhood to childhood. By the way, you know, I don't know much about my own father. All I know a couple of minor things about him. Daniel?
No books, no TV, no radio.
No books, no TV, no radio. No libraries. No libraries. All right, so what you're taught, and you're younger, back then, your mind would remember those things. And I'll tell you, if they remembered Abraham, 75 years old, they would know farther back the world was flooded. They didn't assume. They didn't, I'm not quite sure. They weren't living in a world of evolutionary concept. They weren't living in a world where all these PhD people with, you know, high salaries and high brains and everything else on the sun, telling them that the truth is, you don't have any knowledge of the truth, because we don't. Therefore, you're idiots if you believe anything else as what we think. And therefore, we're idiots because we don't know exactly what the answer is either, but we're smarter than you are. But you understand what I'm saying? To us, it's 800 years approximately. Well, America didn't have it existed for 800 years, have it? Do you know where we came from? Do you know our history? Do you know how we were established? No, you don't. Because you see, we have all this modern stuff that just says, throw out the old. It's evolutionary. Nothing is true anymore. Everything is not true. What's happening today is true. I may be beyond the internet, but how many really, truly, honestly believe the world is getting too hot? You know, Thomas Jefferson wrote about it at Thomas Jefferson's time. And he says, it's not getting hot. They said, the world's getting hot. Of course, they didn't have cars then. Didn't have rockets then. They didn't have telecommunications then. They had horses and they had buggies. And they walked an awful lot of walking, you know. Did they warm up the climate because of their walking? Anyway, we're getting off subject matter. But what happens is that we have come to believe, and it's truth, we've come to believe a lie. These people, let me ask you a quick question. If you were there, if you were part of them, would you remember a bunch of lies? Or would you remember where you came from? You remember where you came from. You'd know who your ancestors were. You'd know who you are. You know why you know that? What does the Book of Chronicles do? Man, birth after birth after birth after birth, they kept records of who was who. Now we have this wonderful thing called Amazon.com. No.
Ancestors.
What's the other one we have? It's the one about Ancestors.com. I don't have to look. They did it for me. Right? You know, I went online to find out. You know, they have the wrong birth of my dad. They have the wrong death of my dad. They have no idea what happened to him. And they had my mother marrying somebody else. Was it my dad? Oh, you know. So where's the records?
They're probably right and you're wrong.
think you were.
That's the problem.
We believe
that.
We believe that.
So when we go through this, next week, I'm going to hand out a paper that's going to be consisting up of...
All right.
The first month, the second month, and the third month. I don't have a third month up here because we're not there yet. And now I want to say one more thing. The reason why I'm going through this process is not to prove that my counting is correct. It has nothing to do with my counting. It has everything to do with you being there, going through it with them. And if you truly and honestly believe the timing that I put together is wrong, then that's okay with me. It's not an issue with me. If you believe it's different time of the year, for crying out loud, go that way, live that way, believe that way. The reason why we do what we do is because of the studies that I have done. I have done so many studies many, many years ago. I couldn't figure this thing out. So I had to go deep scholarly stuff. Rabbis, ancient rabbis, the ultra-orthodox rabbis, every one of them says this is the pattern. Every one of them says that. They know that Mount Sinai is not in Sinai Peninsula. They knew that. Why didn't they correct the Christians? To their disadvantage, they correct a bunch of Christians. The Christians believe anything they want, you know? I can't remember the name of the lady who came up with Mount Sinai in Sinai Desert or Peninsula, but she was somebody important, and everybody says, oh, she must know. And therefore, everybody flocked to it, and the emperor said, oh, yeah, I think it was his mummy, wasn't it? Yeah, Constantine's mother, yeah. And, of course, everybody believes that because, no, she would never lie. She's more righteous than, you know, a lot of people. But never could find the mouth of the two rivers. They couldn't find the mouth of rivers in the middle of the Sinai Peninsula. Because there's no... Let's backtrack. Now, Mount Sinai is way down here, right? Something might have the spot, I don't know. You see any rivers there? No. You know how rivers are formed? The water. Water coming down from the mountain. And there wasn't any rivers up there that were coming down. If there were, they'd have to go that direction or this direction. Have to go somewhere to the sea. And the only rivers you see on this map are these right here. Those are rivers. Now, it looks like it's been big, huge blockade from mountains. Those rivers are dried by now. They are dried rivers. They're no more, they're not a lot like a Russian river anymore. So we have to look back and say, let's look back and let's find out what it is written. And let's find out what is being said. And let's find out if it's true. All right? We're ending today with being at one place. 12 wells and 70 palm trees. And it was not by coincidence at all. If you believe it's by coincidence, you believe by coincidence. I do not. God made sure there was 12. He made sure there was 70. For a reason. Uprightness. He's going to take them to the place. His inhabitants, remember what that psalm says? Remember he read that? Take them to my inhabitants, my place. I'm going to take them to where I am at. Before I get there, though, I have to find out whether or not they will hear my word. And most of the elders did not make it all the way. I told my wife this morning, We're looking around all these young people. I says, well, who knows? Maybe God's saying, you ain't going to make it, but they are. Jokingly, of course. But you understand what I'm saying. A lot of new people are coming in here. Now, you can disagree with what I'm thinking. It does not ask you. I don't need to be challenged with it because it's not going to work challenging me with it. You can try to prove everything you want. It's okay. Just believe what you believe and know what you believe. It can't be different than what I'm doing. Many, many years ago, when I was 26 years of age, this was challenged to me. And I didn't have the slightest idea what to do or say. That's before I met my wife. And so I put it away. I just silenced it. I buried it. Because I could be, for sure, wrong. Well, you know, after all the years, I began to do an awful lot of study of Hebrew. Awful lot of study of Orthodox scholars. And the continual pattern was continually the same with them all the way. And I said to myself, how do I present this to the people? Well, that's what I did. Our little group disappeared overnight. They separated and went their own way. And we were sitting there for a long time, nothing. The group we had before you came along, it disappeared. They called me a heretic. I said, okay. Call me what you want to call me. This is what I see, this is what I understand, and I hope that I may be able to show you as we go through these trials. And I call them trials. We have two more things. It's called the wilderness of sin. That's not a misnomer. It's not a misnomer to call it the wilderness of sin. It's exactly what you think it means. They missed the mark. God will take you in the place of wilderness to test you out. Have you ever missed the mark with God since baptism? Oh, no, of course not. I know that. So we'll learn our next journey, next week, a little bit more about the two places of sin, two locations of sin, and what took place there. Are we learning anything today? Are we part of this movement, if I can call it a movement? Are we part of them moving? Remember, they did not know where they were going. They had no oversight. They had no hindsight. All they were told, they were going to go back to the land where Abraham and Isaac and Jacob were. That's all they knew, because that's part of the promise. And they're heading east, not north. Why east? Why not north? Well, God had to go through, and we will see. He says, I will test you out. If he tests them out, are you going to be free of the test? Most of you know you went through some really hard tests already, and you know you're going to face more tests in the future. And even when you're old, you're still going to face tests. You'll keep facing tests until, like the death of Abraham, now the test is finished. You'll always be tested. Not to see whether you are right or wrong, but to strengthen you, to make you stronger.
I was going to say, I remember an old phrase that said, he took the children of Israel out of Egypt in one day, but it took 40 years to get Egypt out of them.
No, actually, to tell the truth, he had to get something else out of them. Well, I understand what you're saying.